This is an interview conducted at Heathcote on Tuesday, the 18th of November 2008. The interview is being conducted by Kayleen Pern, and the interview subjects are Mr. Charles Santai and Mr. Owen Solis. Can I ask for your name, please?
Yes, my name is Charles Santai, but everybody knew me as Charlie here in Heathcote, just about everybody. I started my training in March 1953 and qualified or graduated in 56.
And how long did you work at Heathcote?
I worked from 53 until 1960, and then I had a break of 12 years almost, and then I came back in 72. Did a refresher course and a number of subsequent years, postgraduate courses, and worked until 2nd of July 1985.
Can I ask how old you were when you finished off?
When I finished off, I was 63 and a half.
And you, Owen, can I ask some details of you?
Yes, my name is Owen Solis. I worked at Heathcote from, 1970 to 1984 as the Director of the Nursing Services.
And Charlie, can I ask, what was your position or your role at Heathcote?
On retirement, I was the Deputy Director of Nursing.
And what did you start, or what role did you start off when you first joined?
Well, I was just nursing. Training nurse first, and then qualified mental health nurse, registered mental health nurse. Then I did some aftercare nursing for a number of years, and then I got promoted to the charge nurse position, and I took over almost established the day center. And then I had another promotion to the Deputy Director of Nursing, and I was in that position for 5 years.
And your background, Owen, before you came to Heathcote?
I migrated from England in 1960. I was then a general trained nurse, and I came over and I started as a postgraduate student nurse at North Ryde Psychiatric Centre in Sydney. And because of my general training, I only took a year to qualify, and then I became a nurse educator at Glasgow Hospital in Sydney prior to coming over to Western Australia in late 1969.
So were you also involved in mental health nursing when you arrived in Western Australia?
Yes, oh yes, then I took the position of a director of nursing services here at Heathcote.
Okay. So that was straight away when you arrived? Or
yes, yes, yes. I was interviewed for the position in New South Wales with Dr. Ellis, who was at that time the director of mental health services here in Western Australia.
So can I just ask a bit of background as to your first impressions of Heathcote, Charlie, when you arrived in the early 1950s?
Yes, I was a migrant, arrived here in Australia, Western Australia, in the beginning of 1950, so with very little knowledge of English, and of course, when I finally got a position here as a trainee nurse, it was pretty difficult for me. I knew the kitchen language and everyday necessities, you know, so I could get by, but all the medical language and jargon, as we used to call it, was very strange to me. But the matron of that time, Matron Green, was very, very supportive to migrants and to me in particular, to my sister as well. And Yes, she helped us to support us. So also the medical staff was very good.
Can I ask what made you come to Heathcote to work, or the reasons behind it?
Well, because first of all, my sister was training here as a nurse. And then, well, I was looking for some occupation apart from being a labourer. And then a position became vacant, available here. My sister notified me, and I applied for an interview, and I was granted an interview. And Dr. Gray and Major Green interviewed me, and then I was accepted for training.
Can I ask what your sister's name was?
Julia.
Julia, okay. And you mentioned that you were an early migrant. Were there other staff members who were also in a similar position to you?
Yes, there's a number of them followed me, you know. Yes.
So were they from a similar background to you?
Similar background, yes, similar background.
So can I ask, where did you originally come from?
Hungary,
okay.
Yeah.
So all these other staff were from Europe as well, other parts of Hungary or other parts of Europe, sorry?
Well, yes, after the war we went to the, as refugees we finished up in Germany, in Bavaria, mm-hmm. and we spent nearly 5 years in Germany before we could emigrate. Mm-hmm.
So how did you find the work when you arrived at Heathcote?
Well, very new to me, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very keen. I was very keen to learn, study, and yes, I was.
So what was your impression of Heathcote as to the type of people you were looking after? And
it was entirely new to me. Entirely new. I never done any nursing before. It had nothing to do with mental health patients. So I found it a bit strange to start with, but I'm very easy to get on with people, and didn't take long until I fall into the groove of things here, and the staff was very good to me.
So how did the staff, did any staff live on site?
No, well, female staff only. Male staff didn't live. Female staff lived in the female quarters.
And which is now Duncraig House.
Duncraig House, okay then. And what about any of the doctors? Were they?
Yes, they Dr. Gray, the superintendent, lived on the hospital ground. And there were two houses, later a third one was built there on the flats, just behind the current yacht club, where Dr. lived.
So what buildings were actually operational when you arrived here? Were all the buildings that are
all
there?
All the buildings plus some of them were demolished.
Okay, so what were they referred to when in your time? Were they similar names to what we have now?
Male wards, female wards. Later on they became named from various rivers, Murray, Canning, Swan.
So which were which buildings? Sorry?
Avon was a new building, a two-story building, which was built during the time of my absence.
I'd be in the 60s, wouldn't I?
In the late
60s.
Yeah.
So Swan Building was used for?
Well, what is called Swan now, that was the treatment block.
Okay.
It's called the treatment block. It had a theatre, which was never used to my knowledge as such, but it was equipped. We used it as student nurses for our lectures, but as a theatre it was never used as such.
And so what about Canning Building?
Canning
was used for?
It was female wards. Female
wards,
yeah.
Okay. And what about the other buildings?
Well, there was the administration building, of course, and then the male wards, which is Murray House now.
Right.
The male wards, each ward, male and female wards, had three wards, one, two, three, ward one, two, and three.
And approximately how many patients would have been here when you arrived in
1956? Always full. Always full. There were 45 male and equal number of female patients. And then, of course, we had about 24 patients in the treatment block, which is what's like right now.
So, Owen, what about your time? Was it the numbers still much the same, or did they increase?
No, I think they stayed about the same numbers because of the accommodation. Except when the even house opened, then that would mean about another 20-odd,
yeah.
Yeah, on top of what Charlie said, yeah.
So approximately how many staff would have been employed when you initially came?
Well, I don't exactly know, but we were always battling for staff, always short. I think it would be about 30-odd male staff and maybe a few more female staff. So it could be altogether about 60 or 70 staff.
And how many shifts would operate per day?
Well, there were morning shifts, early afternoon shifts for one staff, and then afternoon shift from 3 o'clock onwards until 10:30, and then night shift.
And approximately how many staff would be in those other shifts?
That was always a bone of contention.
They were 8-hour shifts.
Okay.
8-hour shifts, mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. And, day shift, on day shifts they used to be about 5 staff, in the 3 halls each, the female and male, and then there was about 3 for the afternoons on each hall, and 2 at night on each hall, which was very very short, very inadequate. Because if any problems in any ward, then somebody had to go to give a hand, and one person was left alone in male ward 1 or female ward 1, which was an extremely dangerous and risky situation. But later on, after a lot of trying through the unions and we had some improvement in the staff, and we managed to have 3 people a night shift. But in Swanghaus, which was the treatment block, there was only 1 staff at night time, which was absolutely ridiculous.
And there was no kind of radio communication
nowadays.
Was there?
We had that phone.
Yes.
We had phone, but that was nothing.
What was it like in the actual surrounding area around Heathcote? You mentioned before the recording that there were very few houses.
Yeah, there were houses around in the streets, up across, apart from the bushland just opposite the main entrance of the hospital, which later was used up for the construction of Bridgewater. Yes, there were houses. Dunkley Road was almost every block was built on Dunkley Road, right up to Kintyre Road.
I don't know what it's worth mentioning, I know, but one house, just a few houses away, who was it, was it the Lieutenant Governor lived there? Was it the Lieutenant Governor lived there? And it was Les Vanderstraten, who was the deputy, was called to the house by his wife, and he was hanging. You say he committed suicide?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
What time period was that?
Well, Les Vanderstraten was here then.
Must have happened.
Well, I thought, packed whilst you were away.
It must have been a long right.
Yeah, well, it would be the late 50s.
Well, I was here until 60.
Yeah. Because from coming up his widow, we knew fairly well in latter years.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Yeah.
Can I ask a little bit about the patients? Kind of what ages were people that you had to look after?
Well, young schoolboys sometimes, you know, we had to look after. And any age, elderly, sometimes in the early 50s, patients from Broadbent Hospital on their last leg were sent out. If they were demented, we had to look after them, nurse them until they
died. So you were like a hospice as well, type of
situation? Well, yes.
Okay.
Well, it shouldn't have been really, but whenever they could, they could. Well, mind you, it was a good opportunity for the student nurses to pick up nursing technique, which wouldn't be available otherwise.
So, I mean, you said you did your training here, so was training always an ongoing thing at the site?
Yes.
So once people graduated... Once people had kind of finished the course, they would stay here, or some of them would move on to other...
Most of them stayed here.
So, I mean, you kind of said that you were battling for staff, so obviously people left then, did they, and went on to other things?
Well, of course, people moved.
So approximately how many people would be training at any one time?
Well, it's hard to say. We didn't have all that many students in the 50s. Maybe half a dozen in each class.
Yeah, they increased.
Increased once the School of Nursing was
established. Then the School of Nursing was established, yeah.
The Mental Health School of Nursing in Claremont or Greylands. Then, of course, the number of nursing staff, student nursing staff, increased. And that became also the workforce, part of the workforce, which made...
Yeah, they would come for approximately 3 months or something like that.
Yes.
Straight up.
Quite strange.
And then move on, then another group would come in. And plus general nurses, students used to come through.
Yes.
And,
We had even nurses from St. John of God Hospital.
Yeah.
The nuns, you remember?
Yeah.
We had nuns.
Yes, I do. I remember one. Yeah.
So we had quite a variety.
Yeah.
So you mentioned...
We will remember one nun and the father, the Catholic father. There was a concert on, and they sang a song on stage. Oh, what was it? Some sentimental love song.
Yeah.
There was these two singing to each other. I forget the name of the song. It'll come.
It was real fun.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a concert. So what, staff would put on regular concerts, or was it special occasions?
Oh, it was staff and scouts and guides put on concerts. Regular theatre groups put on concerts. And various musical groups put on concerts.
Yeah.
Yes.
So where were these?
In the recreation hall.
That's right.
And whereabouts was the recreation hall?
Down by the side, more or less, by the side of Dunkraig House is now. It was there, and there was an occupational therapy department attached to it. But it was quite a substantial hall with a stage.
It was a tremendous hall.
So how long did that hall stand for?
Oh, well, it was built, I think, in about 62.
Yes.
About 62, and then, of course, it was demolished and all the other things.
It was a substantial construction. The stage, the great stage, well equipped stage.
And change rooms.
Change rooms down below. They had hairdresser's saloon down there, and the canteen. It was a tremendous place.
Yeah, they had an undercroft there. You see, there was the hall. Back here was the OT department.
That's right.
And underneath was an undercroft where they had a canteen, as you say, and things like that. Yeah.
So the canteen was for what purpose?
The canteen was run by the Friends of Heathcote. and it was open every day, every afternoon, certain areas for the patients to go in.
And staff.
And staff. You could buy sandwiches, sweets, chocolates, ice cream, drinks, supplements.
You're talking about the patients. Did the families have a lot to do with Heathcote? You know, were there a lot of visiting hours, or were there restricted hours?
Well, there was visiting hours every day, in the afternoon. Lots of visitors.
And were people able to be voluntarily committed? Could they just come?
Yes, voluntary committed, yes. Voluntary admission.
Okay. And did you get a lot
but
of that?
There was a waiting list.
Okay.
In the 50s, and I don't know after the 60s, but in the 50s, definitely.
Yeah, not in
there
the 60s.
Was a waiting list for Heathcote.
Because what other places were available for people besides Heathcote at that
well,
time?
There was only Claremont, that's all.
Yeah.
Whitby Falls, was it?
Well, Whitby Falls was, yes, Whitby Falls was functioning, of course, but that was for permanent residents.
Permanent. For men, I think, too, if I remember.
Men, only men, yeah. Schizophrenics, mainly.
Fox.
Chronic schizophrenia, yes, they were working there. They were making concrete pavement blocks, and they run a certain number of cattle.
So, what type of activities would patients have at Heathcote when you first started, and maybe later on?
Yes, when we first started, there were no occupational therapy department. We had no occupational therapist, so the nursing staff had to fill in and do some occupational therapy. But it was simple: game, basket, waving, things like that. You know. A little bit of carpentry, yes. There was a little bit of carpentry. There was a carpenter bench set up on one of the verandas in the main wards.
So what about sporting activities?
Garden maintenance as well was carried out by the men. Garden maintenance by the men.
Yeah.
And more or less some domestic chores by the female patients.
So when you say domestic chores, I mean, did they help in the kitchen, or did they just do things like laundry?
No, I think they did laundry, but
no,
not much.
No,
it's more, general care of the wards and things like that in the early days.
The main activities for the females were getting items ready for the Christmas sale, making pillow slips and similar things, you know, which were then offered for sale at the Christmas fete.
So there was a Christmas fete on the grounds?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And the money was then used to the funds for the operations.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Matron Green used to look after that. She organized it.
So what about sporting activities available? Were there any?
Well, very little in the 50s. Gardening, yes. Gardening was the main activities for the men. Mm-hmm. We had a vegetable garden and a vegetable gardener. We took patients down to the flats, that's where the gardens were, and regularly the doctors, once a patient attained a certain standard of well-being, then the doctors would refer them to the garden, and they used to be collected. Yes, and then worked there in the morning, worked in the afternoon, came up for lunch and have a break at midday. They boiled their own billy tea there and there, and yes, it was quite good. They were quite productive, actually.
So the vegetables were used on site?
Used in the kitchen, and some of it was even sent across the river to plant.
And then later a cricket pitch was installed.
Well, yes.
Then.
Okay.
And then there were much cricket was played, patients and staff, and then local teams used to
yes,
come.
Yes, of course, when once the day center was functioning, then of course we had softball, played softball there and there, local cricket, and kite flying, and things like that. You know.
I mean, you mentioned later that you were. Or I should say off tape, that you actually organised camps later on. So obviously things changed. So
things changed a lot as time went by. But it was only, to start with, it was possible only because of the medication became...
The modern chemotherapy came into
became, available psychotropic medications in the mid 50s, I suppose, or late 50s, the chlorpromazine, and that's the much maligned. Can't think of it now. They use it for ADD children nowadays. Never mind. Sorry,
that's right.
Any other psychotropic medications?
Clopromazine,
and the common name, yes, and antidepressants, and haloperidol
in conjunction with
yes, and of course the ECT, which was in the early 50s, very prevalent, actually the only treatment we had for that was modified and it became much less traumatic. So as time went by, the psychiatric medicine improved so much that the straitjackets which used to have in the 50s disappeared. We didn't even have one in the hospital. We didn't have one. If the police brought anybody in the straitjackets, you sent the straitjackets back out.
Yeah, it's almost straight away.
So what time period were you looking at when these things, have you said, mid to late 50s, was it?
Late 50s, then things started to improve. The treatment.
Yeah. So then you're out to offer different activities.
And that made certain activities possible.
Okay.
The introduction of occupational therapy staff.
So you mentioned before that some of them used to go fishing and things like that.
Yes. I used to take people down to the river fishing from the treatment block, where there was a special treatment carried out, insulin coma therapy. The people under that treatment used to be, they had some social activities for them, fishing, things like that. Yeah. But that was all organized by the staff. It was no occupational therapist then.
And as I said before, you mentioned you took people on camps. About what time period were you looking at when you started taking people on these?
My maximum fortnight.
No, but what time period was it? This was in the 70s?
That was... the first camp must have been in the late 70s or early... late 70s, I should say, yes. Yeah. The first camp, which was in Diandra.
So what kind of... triggered you to organise a camp? It was something that hadn't been done before, was it?
Well, it was only mainly open to start with for the day centre patients. See, I was running the day centre then, and we had a programme, and we collected money every payday, which was every fortnight, certain monies would be paid in by those who signed up for the camps. so that they had some money. They had to pay a certain amount to pay. We had to pay for the campsites, see, the houses occupied or the huts or whatever. So that money was saved up and we covered the cost. The hospital supplied the raw material for the food, and we cooked. We did the cooking.
So you mentioned there was a day centre. So basically, they were people that didn't stay overnight.
Oh yes, there were people living out in the community, but they needed some support, and also their medication was supervised. And of course, we had a bus by then. Through the activities and the effort of the Friend of Heathcote and the Lotteries Commission, we had managed to purchase a bus. Actually, improved as the years went by, got a bigger and bigger bus. And in the morning, patients used to come in. Those who could come by bus, they came or brought by. The Friends of Heathcote, voluntary drivers, see, they were brought to the day center. And there was a program running the day center, all sorts of programs. Really well equipped with sewing machines, industrial sewing machines, making. All sorts of things.
And you also mentioned
there was a nursing staff who instigated these activities and carried them out.
Yes, that's right. And then you mentioned off the tape earlier too about there used to be a swimming pool
through the generosity.
And
that was based
in what part of the grounds?
Behind Swan House.
That's just where the children are playing. One interesting aside to that was that when the swimming pool was built, the psychiatrist superintendent, Dr. Allison, invited the director of mental health nursing services to come and open it, you see, and he refused. So Dr. Allison, he invited the governor, and the governor came and opened it. And the director of mental health wasn't invited, and he was very. Although he did acknowledge it in his book that it was opened by the government. That's what happened.
Dr. Ellis.
He was Dr. Ellis. Yeah. It was Dr. Ellison who was the director.
I know,
he was
Dr. Ellis.
Psychiatrist.
So we had a strike, you remember, during Dr. Ellis's
reign? During my time, yeah.
Yes. So that's what was the strike about?
It shouldn't have been.
It was something that happened at Claremont Hospital, not here.
Not here. Yeah.
And we held off as long as we could.
Yes.
Encouraging the nurses not to strike, but unfortunately in the end they did.
They supported
and they went out on strike.
Yes.
And we were very disappointed.
Yes.
But the general nurses that were working here doing postgrad experience, they carried the hospital during those days.
And the Friends of
Heathcote. Yes. They all came out working on the wards.
Yes. And also the doctors.
Oh, yes.
The doctors staffed the night shift in Swan House.
Yeah. And talking of migrants, we had two very, very outstanding doctors who worked here. They weren't psychiatrists, but they were doctors who worked here at the hospital. There was the Dr. Marks and Dr. Chung, you know?
Yeah.
But I've done this in life, you know.
Dr. Albert Manus was the first one. No, he was the original one.
Yeah.
So where was Dr. Manus from?
Latvia.
Latvia.
Yes, and he lived in one of the houses down in the place.
So was there a large turnover in the doctors? Like there were in nursing staff?
At the beginning it wasn't, but later on, as the registrar
training
to become psychiatrist. To become psychiatrist. You see, they spent a year, and so I got a number of registrars very clear. Yes, quite a number, you know. Sometimes 3-4 at once. Yes. Well, he got situated now. Used to be a land owned by the Christian Brothers, and actually the area for a reception hospital was allocated at Aquinas College now. And then in the late 20s, I think it was about 28 or 1929, they swapped over. And this is what happened. This became a reception hospital.
Changing his name to reception home, and then
reception hospital. Heathcote Reception Hospital, and then it became just Heathcote Hospital. Yeah.